Well, let's just have a chat, mate. Because tell me about this coaching stuff you're doing.
I decided I was going to look at taking on the life coaching program when I came out of the hospital, basically because the fitness level that I'm on at the moment is not going to quite cut it for doing all the other stuff that we do. So I've got to look at all the alternatives, and the life coaching is something I've been thinking about for quite some time. So I thought, well, rather than think about it, get on and do something. Signed up for an online course and finished that yesterday. So I'm all happy with that, and just going to push forward with it.
Yeah, brilliant. I mean, and if anyone should be doing this, it should be you, because, I mean, you've had some obstacles in your life that you've overcome, haven't you?
I'd say the main ones, thinking back, obviously, the ones that come to mind are the ones in the last 6 years. As you know, 6 years ago, I had some brain trauma. In fact, I had lots of brain traumas. It started off with training. I'm a martial artist, so I do the karate. And I ended up with what's called a subdural hematoma, because I was taken down with a scissor sweep, which is a great technique. Unfortunately, if you don't land properly, it can be devastating. And I didn't land properly. I smashed the back of my head. I had a bleed on the brain. So I've got two blinking great big holes in the top of my head where they did borehole operation, and ended up in hospital with that. But that was okay. Got over that. Came back. Started training.
Hang on a minute. They actually said you wouldn't walk again, didn't they?
That was later.
Oh, was that later? Was it?
Because I also went back in after that a few months later, because I was having more headaches and problems. And they did a CT scan, and what they found is I had an aneurysm, and which was a bit of a shock, because they didn't find it on the first one. So whether or not they missed it on the first scan, which I can't see happening, or whether or not now this aneurysm had started to grow as a result of the initial fall with the trauma to the brain, which is possible. And I was told that I should have the operation to rectify it. And basically the way I was told that was by a young doctor who came into me, says, and he sat down with me. He said, Mr. Keats, he said, let me just explain something to you. He said, you've got an aneurysm there. And if that blows, if that bursts, you've got an 80% chance of dying. Well, yeah, it was a no-brainer, really. I said, yeah, just let's do it. And hence I've got scars across here. And they did that. They opened me up. I had a craniotomy, so they opened the skull and they clipped the aneurysm. So I've got a bit of titanium metal in my brain, which was all good. Obviously, the main thing is I was alive. But unfortunately, while I was on the operating table having the clipping, I also had a stroke. And I didn't know anything about that until I came round, and some poor nurse had the responsibility of telling me that I had it was a minor stroke. But when I did come round, I was paralysed down my left side. I had a slight spasticity in the hand, couldn't work my left hand properly, and I couldn't walk, obviously. So that was a bit of a challenge. More than anything else, that was the hardest thing to try and get over. But I remembered actually being on course with yourself just prior to actually going into the hospital. And I think it was the NLP program that we ran. And we were talking about the way the brain works and neuroplasticity and the way it can reschedule itself and remodel itself. And I started thinking about that and how the more you practice something, the better things go, the more the synapses start firing together. And that really helped me, because I was determined I was going to get out of that hospital. And we were talking earlier on, you and I, about setting goals. Well, I had a goal because I went in November, the beginning of November for the operations. And in December, I was adamant I had this goal that I had to get out because my karate club were having their Christmas party. And I was absolutely determined I was not going to miss it. So I had that fixation. That's what my goal was at that moment in time. And I started working on myself, physio in the hospital, etc. I was working with even just things like picking coins up off a tray on the bed. But I started thinking, well, I've got to get mobile. So I would get myself out of bed. And I was doing squats again at the side of the bed. Every day I was doing some squats. I would start it off on 4 or 5. Then I was just building them up day by day. Ended up with strength in the legs. So they put me on a Zimmer frame, which I started walking around the wards. And it got quite entertaining for the other people in the hospital. Obviously, there was other people with brain traumas and different things in the ward I was in. And they ended up calling me the karate geezer, the karate bloke, because every morning I was up and I was doing these exercises. And I said to them, you know, I've just got to keep pushing on this, because if I don't, then I could sit here quite easily and just fester. And I thought, if I do that, I'll just give up. And I don't like giving up. So I started walking. Then from the Zimmer frame, I went on to crutches. And I managed to get it. The physios were quite happy with the progress I'd made, that they allowed me to come home. And literally, it was the day before my club's Christmas party. So I went to the club with my crutches. I couldn't drink or anything, but I just wanted to be there with everybody. Did a bit of karaoke on the night, so that was all good fun. But I think the main thing for me is I realised I had to have something to focus on. And, you know, I had to have goals to achieve.
Going back to when you were in the hospital and you said that the other sort of patients in the hospital found it quite entertaining that you would get up every morning and walk around the ward on your Zimmer frame and you know, try and do a bit more every day. They weren't obviously doing that themselves then.
No. I don't remember seeing anybody getting out of the bed and pushing themselves. Because, you know, let's face it, everybody who's in those wards have been through a lot of traumatic experiences. And I don't think they had not the get up and go. I don't think they had the vision or the goal. They just wanted to get better. But I had more than just wanted to get better. I latched onto a reason to get out. And obviously the other reason was my family. I wanted to get back home. I wanted to be with my family. You know, it was Christmas time. Mm. So I needed to get out. I needed to do that.
And this is one thing about coaching, because we're going to talk about coaching and goal setting in a minute. But, you know, I wrote this stuff down today because, you know, like you're doing now, I went through all the training years ago. And the difference between a coach and a therapist and a mentor and a consultant, you know, I mean, coaching pinches bits from each of those, of course, but there's a difference between a coach. And a coach works on the individual and has to give them that vision of, you know, the better them. You know, it's got to give them a vision of where they want to be, not necessarily whether they're more intelligent or doing things at a better level, but it's a very personal thing. And this is saying, you know, this is the vision you've got to have. Now you need to figure out how to get this. We don't tell them how to do stuff per se.
Absolutely,
we're building the vision and motivating and inspiring, and that's the whole key aspect of a coach. But you did that for yourself.
Yeah, I've had coaches obviously in life. I mean, look at you as a mentor and a coach, to be honest. But I also had people in my previous career. I mean, I spent 30 years in the hospitality industry in the hotel security. And for 10 years, I didn't move. I was just a security officer for 10 years in central London in Park Lane. And I didn't move, but I kept seeing other people moving ahead of me and, you know, overtaking me and getting promoted. And I remember going to my boss at the time and saying, well, why aren't I getting approached for this? why is nobody speaking to me? And I remember definitely in turning around and says, well, Paul, we never thought you wanted it because you've never come forward and said anything. And I thought, well, yeah, I do. And within 6 months, I was the deputy head of security in that hotel, which is the Grosvenor House on Parkway. And within a year of that, I was head of security of the Waldorf Hotel. Because once I'd decided I wanted it, then it was quite rapid. The promotion and the fact that people really now took me as a legitimate manager. But I had a person who basically took me under their wing, and he was my boss at the time, a gentleman by the name of Bill Fairweather. And he was an old school police officer who was ex-CID, and he took no messing. He was quite forthright, let's put it that way. And he literally took me under his wing, and he showed me what I needed to be doing. And I'll never forget, we had an investigation into a massive fraud within one of the hotels that I was looking after. And we were interviewing all of the staff involved. And he said to me, Paul, he said, what you've got to remember is go with your gut feeling. And he said, who do you think is responsible for this? He said, somebody in this office is responsible for that major loss. And we were talking tens of thousands of pounds. And I had a feeling about somebody, but I didn't go with that. So I started looking logically and thinking, well, who's going to have access to everything else? And he said, well, let's write down who you think. And we wrote them down, and we kept all of these little notes. And when we actually caught the guy, it wasn't the person I thought. And he says, who did you have down? Because we actually caught him. He tripped himself up, and we had a major bust with him. And I said, well, it wasn't me. I thought it was the cashier. And I said, who did you? And he turns over his paper, and he's got the guy's name on the top. He says, I didn't know. He says, I just had that feeling. He says, like I say, always go with your gut feeling. And I remember that all the time. And I've always gone with my gut feeling ever since then. And it's worked well for me, totally honest. Yeah. He also then showed me what to be looking for and how to do things, not giving it to me, but showing me the way to do it, where I can find that information, you know, how to do an investigation, what things to be looking out for. But it wasn't a case of him doing it for me. It was a case of him giving me the tools to do it myself. And, you know, that was great. I enjoyed all of that.
But it's really interesting in what you're saying, because, you know, you saw other people getting promoted. You weren't getting promoted. And the only reason was because you didn't raise your hand and say, I want that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
and there
must have that vision.
Yeah, and there's so many people out there. I mean, I did a short video the other day about, you know, if you have a big enough dream, the fact you've had the capacity to have the dream means you've got the capacity to fulfill it.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people that have these visions. They have these dreams that they want this, whatever it is. And then they talk themselves out of it. They go into logic mode and talk themselves out of it. You know, I can't do it. It won't happen to me. But the very fact they've got the capacity to have the dream means they've got the capacity to make it a realization, which is what you did. You said, right, I want it now. And that was you now on that route.
Well, I think the biggest thing that I found, Mark, was is self-doubt. And you've got to get over that self-doubt, because what we tend to find is when you're thinking of doing whatever it is you're doing, it's like me setting up my business, you know, doing the training that we do. Yeah, there is, to a degree, is am I able to do that? Am I confident enough to do that? And then it's having the foresight and the vision of saying, well, actually, yes, I can. And I think you've got to keep on top of that, because that can set itself in your brain quite easily and stop you from moving forward. Because that self-doubt, and I it's what I call myself, self-talk, you know, and it's, am I or can I can't do this, or I haven't got the time, I haven't got the money. All of that is, it's so detrimental to the way you're thinking. And you know, going on the stuff that you put out, and, you know, and I've looked in other areas, is, you know, we all know, and especially if we've been on your courses, is what you're thinking here will manifest itself. will be what you're concentrating subconsciously in here. What you're thinking about most is what you'll be heading for. So instead of having that self-doubt, is have that thought process of, yes, I can do it. And yes, I am bloody good at doing these things.
Yeah, and you're so right. And the fact we can have self-doubt, the fact we can actually, in our own heads, generate a perception, something that's not true, that we can't do something, and then fulfill that, proves the actual mechanics of it, if you like, works. Because if we can do it that way, you can do it the other way. You know, it's absolutely thing. And you're a living inspiration with this. I mean, Jim's on here, and I don't know how to answer this, Jim. Forgive me, but he's just put down. He said, truly inspirational, Paul. I have had to have several CT brains and MRI scans in recent weeks. Thankfully, all clear. It's made me look at my lifestyle and goals moving forwards. You know, I echo what Jim's saying here. You know, you're not someone that just goes out and talks about stuff. You're someone that's actually gone out and done it and come out the other end, you know, and achieved stuff where other people either didn't do it because they didn't believe they could do it or didn't want to do it or felt they wouldn't get anywhere with it. But let's fast forward, because you got back on your feet.
Yeah.
You put all that behind you.
I got back, and then I started doing physio. I had a physiotherapist who I was put in touch with here in Essex. And I went to see him a couple of times, and we had a very interesting conversation, because I turned up there still on my crutches, and I do feel sorry for the poor guy now, because I should have done it. He said to me when we were on one of our first meetings, he said, okay, Mr. Keats, he said, you've had a stroke, and we need to look at where you expect yourself, where you expect to be in 12 months' time, which is a standard question, isn't it? You know, in any coaching, you know, where do you want to be? What do you want to be doing in 12 months' time? And I turned around to him and I said, well, I want to be back to normal. Bear in mind, I was still learning to walk properly and everything else. And he sort of smiled at me and gave me a little smirk. And I didn't like it. You know, I thought, what the hell is he smiling at? You know, this is what I want. I need to do this. And he said, no, realistically, he said, you've had a stroke. He said, realistically, where do you want to be in a year's time? And I sort of lost it with him. And I turned around to him and I said, I'll tell you where I'll be in a year's time. And I said, in a year's time, I'll walk a mountain. I'll climb a bloody mountain. And he did that little smirk again, and I went back once more, and I just thought, no, I just can't work with this guy. So I started training myself. As you know, I do the martial arts. So I went back to my karate roots, and I started working on my basics, my balance, my form and everything else, which really helped. And it also helped that I had people there who were supporting me, you know, as with my family, with my friends. And 9 months later, I climbed Snowdon, which was a challenge.
I remember you doing
but
that.
I didn't have a walking stick, because he said, I'll have you walking. The biggest thing for me was when I'd said that to him, he said, well, I'll tell you what we will do. He says, in 12 months' time, I'll have you walking with one stick. I said, nah, that's never going to happen. I'm not going to have a walking stick, because he brought out this old man's walking stick. And I don't see myself as an old man. You know, even now I'm 61. I'm not an old man.
No,
it's a mindset. So we climbed Snowdon, but I don't know if you remember over that year when I, which was must have been 2016. I came did the refreshers with you guys, and I was still a little bit dodgery at that point, but I'd started doing the 22 for the 22.
That's right, which
you joined in, and we all did it there. Well, my aim was to do the last set of 22 press ups at Mount Snowdon at the top. I didn't do it on that time because when we got there, we got to the top, and it was a gale was blowing. It was 80 mile an hour winds. People were being moved off the top of the mountain. They'd closed the paths so nobody else could come up. So we got to the top. There was hundreds and hundreds of people at the top. It was ridiculous. But there was this gale blowing, The railway had been shut down, so there was nowhere, you couldn't go anywhere, you couldn't get back down. They closed the toilets and the cafe, so you couldn't actually take any shelter. So we walked back down, we came down. So I never got the chance to do the 22 on that time. So I went back the next year and did 22.
Good man.
On the top. And that helped me doing those 22 again, but that was a target.
Yeah.
That for me was something to keep me going. I was still pushing myself to get fitter. I started work again, but I'd set a precedence in myself. So when I was doing the walks and everything, I started raising money for Help for Heroes. At the moment, the figure I've raised is just over 4,000 for that, which was great. Because I didn't just do that. I then started looking at how else I could raise money and what could benefit me. So then I started doing triathlons. I'm not a sportsman. You know, I'm not a fitness freak. I'm not a person who deliberately goes out just to do that because it's something that I love doing. I'll do it now and I do love doing it. But that was a challenge for me to do open water swimming, to start cycling again. I hadn't cycled for 20 odd years and I got back on a bike. So I started doing triathlons to raise money for Help for Heroes, but also I found other causes that I wanted to work with. And yeah, so I did a lot of that. Then last year, October last year, during, you know, the coming up towards the second lockdown, I think it was, is I came down with COVID. And I went into hospital, I believe on the 22nd of October. I can't remember going into the hospital. That basically, the end of October is a blur for me. And I was put on into the ICU. I was put on a respirator, I was put on life support. I was put into an induced coma twice, because the first time they did it, they brought me out and they put me on a thing called CPAP, which is a mask, covers your face and it forces oxygen into your lungs. Because my lungs have been affected, you might be able to hear it now in my voice. So they were using this system on me, but I couldn't work with it. I didn't like it and it wasn't something I could tolerate to a great deal. So they ended up putting me back into another induced coma. And when I came out of that induced coma, I don't know if you can see, I've got scarring on my neck.
Yeah, so
a tracheostomy. So I was breathing through a tube in my throat. And that was November. And to be honest, that's the only stuff I can remember is waking up in November and going through, you know, the whole process of trying to get better again. Because while I was in intensive care, I lost just over 3 stone in weight, but it was muscle mass. I remember looking at my legs and I thought, shit, what's happened there? I looked like somebody who'd just come out of Belsen. My legs were just gone. Because my body was eating up the muscle mass. So what I've been doing again is I've got myself targets. I started walking around my garden with the walking frame, because when I came out in January the 5th, so I was in there for 11 weeks, I started tasking myself with getting better, getting stronger, and doing stuff again. So I'm now walking up to about 3 miles, 4 miles sometimes, and I'll get better, I'll get fitter. As a way of encouraging me, my daughters, God love them, have already signed me up to do the Three Peaks. So I've got no option but to get better, to get fitter, in all honesty.
Yeah.
But again, that's given me a target. Now, they were hoping I'd do it 2002. I don't think 2002 is realistic. 2022.
I was going to say, you're going back in time then, mate.
Yeah, I'm going for 2023. And we will do the Three Peaks. That's without a doubt. Drunken still here, because at the moment, I think I'm running out of lives. My mother, God bless her, unfortunately, she died only 2 weeks ago, which was a big hit for me. My mum said I was like a cat with nine lives because of everything I've been going through. So I'm slowly running out of lives. So hopefully by 2023, I'll still have a few left and we can get up those mountains.
Oh, yeah, you will.
If there's anybody on our group who wants to join me, please just let me know.
Oh, we'll get this out to the group. But it's, you know, your story is just absolutely amazing, and it's inspirational, you know, motivational. You know, you've had so many things happen to you, yet you're still positive and you're still goal setting. You know, that's the key thing, isn't it, for you?
Yeah.
Why?
I'm an honest belief that I remember reading somewhere is you can either get on with living or get on with dying. And you know, I'm not ready to die yet. So I'm definitely going to be getting on with living. And to get on with living, you've got to find things that you want to be doing. You know, I want to get fitter. I want to get well, which is my main target at the moment. But I also want to be able to do stuff with other people, which is why I want to look at the life coaching. I'm not certain what the future holds, but it'll be whatever it is. But you've got to have vision. You've got to have things that you can look for and go towards. I really do believe that. And I think it's just the way I'm wired. You know? But I didn't know that all those years ago. If I'd have had this ability, well, I did have the ability, but I didn't reach inside myself to do it all those years ago when I was waiting to get a management position. You know, when I was in the military, as you know, I was in the Navy. It was just a job. It was a great job. Don't get me wrong. I loved it. But I had no vision. I didn't see myself as being a career person there. So, again, I didn't push myself on that. I came out. I was quite happy just being a security officer in the hotels. And then I thought, well, actually, I need to be doing more. I've got family. I've got children. I need to be pushing myself. So, hence, I did.
Yeah. But it interesting.
Wasn't until you've got that vision and you've got that foresight, you know what you want to do, and you've got a clear path you can go and follow it, you can do it.
It's really interesting because this, by the way, all right, yeah, see, Better Life Journal. This is one of my old coaching journals. I've got tons of journals that I write all this shit down. And when we decided to do this, I went back through and I started to look at some stuff that I'd written down years ago. And I've written this: what is a coach? Because, you know, I've done hypnotherapy and NLP and EFT and all the other stuff. And this is the difference between a coach, a mentor, a therapist, and a consultant. Because I think people don't understand the difference, but a therapist basically is dealing with people's past life traumas. So they're saying, you know, this is what's happened to you, and we need to try and help you either get better, or in the majority of cases, like with your physiotherapist, let's manage it, you know, to the minimum standard. Then you've got a consultant. And they provide specific knowledge. They do analytical stuff, and they're looking at ways to actually, you know, solve problems for businesses. So they look at all the analytical data and everything else. Then you've got a mentor, and a mentor is someone that uses their knowledge and experience to help other people who are probably just starting out without that knowledge and experience. And that's what you had with your friend, your mentor, when he helped you. But a coach is different. Now, coaches borrow things from all of those areas. But this is what I like about coaching, and this is why you're going to make an absolutely brilliant coach. And this is what I wrote down years ago. I put, a coach is someone who helps you imagine a greater possibility for yourself and then supports you in achieving it. That's probably 20 years old, yeah, maybe longer. Yeah, because coaching is just such an important thing. You know, We say in NLP, and you know this, if you want to be the best you want to be in whatever, you know, vocation you have, find someone who's achieving at the level you want to achieve it and mirror them, you know, or get them to mentor you or get them to coach you to do it. Because you can spend 20 years of wasted time going down a load of cul-de-sacs and blind alleys, but you get someone who's done it, the pathway's already there.
Absolutely.
Now, when I look at you, and, you know, we've been friends for years. We were on the same ship together at different times as well, weren't we? That's the bizarre thing. Yeah.
The Bulwark, yeah.
Yeah, the old Bulwark. You know, you, what you've gone through and come out the other side to be able to do is absolutely incredible. You know, it's motivational, it's inspirational. And if there's people there, there may be someone out there that is having a similar sort of health issue. You're the ideal coach for that person. You know.
To be totally honest, Mark, that's the area that I do see myself going into as far as coaching is concerned. I want to be able to show people that there is light at the end of that bloody tunnel. You know, that although you may have been through all of these traumas and, you know, setbacks, don't just sit there and think that's it, I can't do anything. Okay, yeah, I have difficulty breathing a bit more at the moment, but that'll get better. You know, that I've got no doubt that will get better. And, you know, strength is not as good as it used to be, but again, that will get better.
Yeah.
You know, and it's only perseverance, and it's knowing that you've got to get to that place. But I keep hearing, you know, like you said, just then, inspirational. And I don't see what I do as being inspirational, because it's just me. You know, if more than anything, I think it's... an irritation at times, because everything I do, I tend to put on bloody Facebook and Twitter and all of those formats, mainly because I'm usually trying to raise money for other things. But I start really thinking, well, actually, am I just an irritation in some cases? Because people must get up a bit.
Yeah, but you...
But then, what is that, Mark? That's that voice there, isn't it?
It is.
Just putting a little barrier there, saying, well, maybe I should stop doing this. Well, actually, no, I shouldn't.
No, you shouldn't.
I need to be looking at other ways and better ways and pushing it forward, rather than thinking, well, maybe somebody doesn't like me doing all of this. Well, that's their prerogative. You know, if they don't like it, then fine.
There's the old Billy Connolly story with that. You know, I mean, he was on the Michael Parkinson show years ago, and they had these business consultants on the show, and they were talking about, you know, the best ways to get customers and this sort of stuff. And they would say the best customer you can get is one that's got an objection. So they've got a complaint and they've got an objection. And if you can turn them around, they're a customer for life. And they said, do you do that, Billy, to Billy Connolly? And he said, no. And they said, well, what do you do if people complain? Because your humor's quite brash. You know, what do you do if people complain? He said, nothing. And they said, why not? He said, well, he said, think about this, he said. He said, no one who comes to my live shows complains, because they've all seen me on telly, so they know what I'm like. He said, all the complaints I get are from people that watch me on the telly. He said, and they'll be sat there watching me, think, and they'll go, oh, that bloody Connolly's on again. And they'll probably call the other half over and go, look, sit next to me. So they're both sat there watching me. They don't want to watch me, but they're both sat there watching me, it really irritated. He said, they've only got to press the button and change channel. They've only got to turn me off. He said, but they watch me and they get irritated. He said, then they go and sit in front of the computer, write me a long letter, write me an email, send it to me. He said, I get it, I'll put it in the bin. He said, because they've only got to do that and it's gone. And you know, like you, in many ways, I put out a lot of content. And through COVID and through the lockdowns, I've been putting stuff out primarily to try and help people. That's generally the main shift of it. And I have the same doubt you get. Even though I write books on the subject and I teach the subject, I get the camera out and I think, I wonder if people are sick of the sound of my voice here, because I am, you know. And then an email drops in, and I had one the other day from someone. It was, and I was actually doubting whether to do something that day. And an email came through and it said, look, we've just seen this video about this that you put out. And I was at my lowest point and it's picked me up. And I thought, you know what, I don't care if 10,000 people hate what I do. If you can get one person,
there's that one person.
That's all that matters, you know. And so you don't see yourself as inspirational, and that's part of the core of the values of a good coach, you know, because you don't see it in yourself. You know, most people who have been really successful don't see themselves as the person who should have success. That's part of the humbling feature of it. That's part of the humility of being a good coach. And this is why, you know, if people need help, who have gone through some stuff with you, I can't think of anyone better, mate. You've been there, done it, got the T-shirt, and written the book.
Well, I'll be totally honest with you here now, Mark, is when we spoke last week and I was talking to you and you said about, why don't we come up on Saturday and we'll talk about coaching, etc. I was cacking myself. I was thinking, oh, damn, he's now put me on a spot. I've got to, you know, I can either say, well, no, I'm not ready for it. But then, you know, if you're not ready for it, then you're just cheating yourself. So, yes, absolutely. which is why, you know, straight away I said, yeah, let's do it. I had no idea what I was going to do. And I've got notes and things that I've put together for what we were going to be looking at doing. And it's changed because, you know, these things change. And when you said today, you know, about people signing up and we didn't have anybody, and you said, do you still want to go ahead? Well, actually, yeah, it was great because, you know, it gives us a chance just to do this. And to be honest, mate, it's nice to see your face for a while. Not on a video recording, but talk to you face to face.
Yeah, it's good to see you too, mate. But it's brilliant. And, you know, you've launched your coaching business now, haven't you?
It's up and running, yeah. Well, I haven't launched it. I've got my qualification, which, to be totally honest, there is no real qualifications for coaching. It's, you know, anybody can be a coach. But I thought I need to have some accreditation just so if when I do put the website and everything out, then I can at least fall back and say, well, I've done the courses. I've got this accreditation, this qualification. It's worth as much as the paper it's written on, to be totally honest.
Yeah, but you know
what we do with it.
Exactly. You know, and I know now, because we're old sweat to this, success is 80% psychology. And when I say success, if that means you can start walking again and you can go from having an aneurysm on the brain, major operations, to walking up a mountain, that's psychologically driven. You know, you can do all the training in the world, and if you're not psychologically correct, it ain't going to happen. And we've got people out there, you know, in business and in relationships and doing stuff, and they've got all the qualifications. I mean, think about this. If all it was technology, every one of us would be a millionaire now. Because that's what the machine does. Yeah. You know, if it's all down to technology, all of us would be living happy, successful, fulfilled lives. You know, we'd all have fantastic relationships because the technology would take care of it. No, the technology is there to provide information. The psychology is there to make you a better person than what you already are, and to give you the ability to have that vision so you can actually look into the future. I mean, think about this. You know, I said this the other day. This 3.5 pounds of stuff between our ears, which you, by the way, you know, use and have used so well, it is the best virtual reality machine ever, because nothing else has been built without it. You can't build virtual reality machine until the virtual reality machine between someone's head decided we'll build an artificial intelligent virtual reality machine. So that came from within there. Everything that comes from within there. You know, there's an old saying, I can't remember who said it. It was either Jim Rohn or someone, one of the old motivational speakers. You know, everything's created twice, you know, once by a thought and second by an action. And there's two things with you. Is one, you're a visionary, you have the thought. But secondly, you take the action. You got out of bed when you were in that hospital the first time when no one else did. Yeah. And I know someone else.
But for me, that was just me.
Yeah. But it's
I don't understand why people didn't want to do that. But I could not do that, if you understand what I mean.
Yeah. I mean, it's a very close friend of mine. I won't mention her name. She got cancer in her stomach, and she went into hospital. She's like you, very, very good mind. And when she had the operation, they said, look, you need to lie in bed for a few days. And she was all crouched up like this. But she noticed everyone else there was all crouched up like this. And when they actually eventually got out of bed, they were walking with a hunch. She said, I'm not having that. So she got out of bed and managed to stand as straight as she could, bearing the pain, and each day she stood as straight as she could, and within 2 or 3 days she was walking around the ward with a straight back. And the doctors and nurses said, you shouldn't be doing that. And she said, well, I don't want to end up like that, you know. Now she's gone on to be a very successful property developer. Now you can argue that, well, she's got skills in property development. She'd never touched property until she came out of hospital having had cancer. You know, it's the mindset. It's so important to have the right mindset.
Yeah. And I think sometimes in life challenging situations do help you along that way. I mean, obviously for me, the big one was, you know, I've nearly died several times. So I appreciate how fragile life really is. But it's not just a case of, taking part in life. You have to live life. It's no use just letting life go by. You have to live it.
Yeah. So
it's... And, you know, the more you can put it, the more you put into it, the more you'll get out of it. Definitely, yeah, something I'm going forward with now, even more so.
Well, yeah, I mean, hopefully people will watch this because we're doing the recording and I'll stick it up on the coaching and mentoring group. But, you know, and by the way, if anyone is watching this as a replay, if you need any help, get in touch with Paul, you know, get coached by Paul.
Sorry, I've just realised I've got... light flicking off my glasses here, because all I've got is a little picture of me there, so There you go. That's fair.
Yeah. No, I would say, yeah, just say
that comes off my head.
Yeah, you see your head shining now. Look. But no,
yeah, I'm up for anything. You know, even if it's just a bit of guidance that I can do. At the moment, I'm quite happy just to gain a bit more knowledge and a bit more experience in doing this. So at the moment, not forever, I'm not going to be charging people for guidance and help.
Yeah.
At the moment, but it will happen.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to say something to you now that I said to Trevor Henry a while ago, and he always refers to it. So I'm going to go into the kitchen, and I'm going to get a knife, and I'm going to stab you in the eye, right? Because you just said, right?
I can understand, I've got to
gain a bit more knowledge. Bloody hell, mate, you've nearly died so many times, and you've come out the other end. How much more knowledge do you want? And by the way, you know this, and people watching this, I hope you take this on board, all right? You've got 400 billion neurons in your brain. Right? You've got everything inside you you need to actually live the life, do the things you want to do, achieve the things you want to achieve. You just got to learn to unlock it. And that's where a coach comes in, because a coach is about you. A consultant is about process. It's about your business. A therapist is about your past trauma. And a mentor is someone who helps someone, is somebody successful that helps someone that hasn't even started yet or is new in the industry. So they all work on skills, on processes, but a coach works on you. And there's no one better right now than Paul to lead you through this, because he has the knowledge and he has the experience, and he's very humble when he says, you know, I need a bit more knowledge and experience. No, you don't. Right? You're ready to go. And if you are watching this and you want coach of mine, get in now, because he just made an offer that I'm going to go and stab him in the eye with, because that offer won't be around forever, because he needs to earn a living.
Yeah, all right. I'll work on that one then.
Yeah, even Jim said it here. Look, yeah, the amount of knowledge and lived experience you have, Paul, is priceless. Absolutely. Yeah.
Thanks, Jim.
And Jim's also said this: to go through all of that and COVID, you have an amazing story to tell that might not seem inspirational to you, Paul, but is, and will be so motivational and inspirational to many others, mate. And that's what a coach is: someone who motivates, inspires. You know, that's a coach. You know, it gives people the vision to be a better person, or, you know, be a better version of themselves than they already are.
Yeah, because as you said, whatever they want, it's already in there.
Yeah.
You know, they've just got to be able to identify it, and, you know, with a little bit of help and a bit of guidance, is being able to grab onto it and then go with it. But I do believe that it has to be associated with what you believe in life, because it's no use saying, oh, I want to do this job, and then you're thinking, well, actually, you know, I don't really believe in that, but it makes a lot of money, because that just doesn't work.
No, it's got to be aligned with your values and your beliefs, absolutely.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, and again, you know all about this stuff. You know all about it. You've been on courses, you've done it, you've lived it, you know, and you know, you've got the live through experience. Yes.
Well, if I can help anybody, I'm more than happy to do it.
Brilliant. Well, yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, it's been an amazing 45 minutes, mate. It's been lovely to see you.
45 minutes already, bloody hell.
Yeah, you wouldn't stop talking, you miserable git.
I know, sorry.
No, worth every minute, Paul.
Wind me up and let me go. There you go.
No, seriously. Your story needs to get out there. Yeah. you need to be available for people. You know, I mean, I've been on these coaching courses. I've spoken on a lot of them, actually, their request. And don't get me wrong, people that go to be life coaches, absolutely brilliant. But some of them will never have the experience that you've got. They'll never have the actual, what I call boots on the ground, you know, shop floor experience of putting everything in action and actually doing it. Mm. And you've done it. You know, you've actually achieved that by using the tools and the processes and your mind in the ways that you can teach other people to do that now. Because
let's face it, it's... Well, I was going to say it's not hard. Well, it is hard, because it's hard to make that choice. It's hard to make that decision. It's hard to make that commitment. That's what the hard part is. But once you've done it, you know, and you get used to that process, it comes quite easy, because you've done it once. You know it works. Do it again.
Yeah.
That's all it is.
Yeah,
it's not rocket science, is it?
No, it's not.
Anyway, Mark, that's brilliant. Thank you, mate.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolute pleasure. Right, so... We'll catch up shortly. What I'm going to do is I'll try to get this live on Facebook tonight, but the live link wouldn't work for some reason. I don't know why that is. But what I'll do is I'll get a recording rendered, and then I'll ping it up on Facebook as soon as, probably be later on this evening or first thing tomorrow morning, because I want other people to hear your story.
Yeah, I didn't swear, did I?
Oh, loads.
Oh, shit.
You done again. No, you didn't, mate.
That's all right. I don't know.
I nearly did when you told me about your physiotherapist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, the funny thing is when I came out with COVID, I had physios come here to the house to see me, to see what I'm doing. And to be totally honest, they came and said, well, we can't teach you how to do anything else, because I was already doing what I wanted to do, you know, making sure I was out, I was doing the walking. I've got my little gym that I've got in there in my cabin. So I was doing all of that. And they said, well, you're doing exactly the right stuff. And she goes, you did some physio with our colleague. And I thought, oh, shit. I went, yeah, I do. I remember meeting him. She goes, yeah, he says he remembers you. And I said, well, please give him my apologies. I didn't mean to be so rude.
You know what? Someone told me a long time ago when I was in the Navy, because if I didn't know, both Paul and I were in the Royal Navy, and we have the Royal Marines, don't we? We have our soldiers, Royal Marines. And someone once said to me, he said, there's only one thing worse, one thing more dangerous than a Royal Marine with a gun, and that's a matlow with an attitude. Yeah. And you're an ex-matlow with the right attitude. I mean, Jim's just said something else here, which is brilliant. And yeah, another guy, very successful, and he's taken action. He said, not a lot gets me up at 4 a.m. Paul. I had a feeling this would be good, because Jim's in Australia, so he's up at 4 o'clock in the morning. They're listening to you.
We can connect, Jim.
Thanks, Jim. Right, buddy, I'm going to love you and leave you.
You take care, guys.
We'll have a chat.
You stay well.
Yep. Speak to you soon, buddy. You take care. Okay. And cheers, by the way, anyone listening to this, if you want any coaching from that man there, get in touch with him, because he's your man.